I'm Steve Lascalzo, and this is The Way. You're listening to This Is The Way podcast on Ahsoka Part 8, The Jedi, The Witch, and The Warlord, Season 1, Episode 8, the finale. And I think my plan is to release this podcast episode on the 4-year anniversary of This Is The Way podcast's first episode regarding the preview for The Mandalorian. I don't want to say this is the last one, but it is the last of an era, and I think I'll explain that either in this podcast or in one to come, but this is it for now. I've been playing Chopper clips as a way to segue into talking about Dave Filoni. He provides the digitally altered voice of Chopper and has since Rebels. He's an executive producer and creative director at Lucasfilm. He has been since 2020. Filoni is the creator and showrunner of the Ahsoka series, directed the premiere and part 5, and has sole writing credit on all 8 episodes of the season. But after watching the entire season, I'm not sure he should have. Director for part 8 is Rick Famuyiwa. I have liked what he's done in the past. He started out in the company directing episodes for Favreau and Filoni in The Mandalorian, and his vision for the show and characters meshed so well, he ended up being elevated to executive producer status for The Mandalorian Season 3, and Filoni trusts him with the finale of the first season here. All season long, the end credit sequence was courtesy of Ewan Company. It symbolizes Ahsoka's trip to Peridia. It remains unchanged since the first episode, except for the names that we see as credits during the journey. Now, if you're interested in the translation of those runic Dathomiri lettering on the star map, I did go over a list in This Is The Way podcast episode 137, but honestly, it's going to serve you better to see a visual representation of the translations, and it should be pretty easy to search for one on YouTube, and that's if you care, because now that we've seen the entire season, there's nothing super exciting about this, except for maybe you want to see where some of the planets are in the galaxy, but then you don't even really get to see a full map, so I'm not sure how much it helps. The musical piece played during the end credit sequence is Kevin Kiner's end credit Ahsoka theme. It has been available to stream on most music services, including YouTube, for some time. Volume 1 of the Ahsoka soundtrack was available since September 15th, and Volume 2, featuring Episodes 5 through 8 music, is available as of October 6th.
It was invigorating, for sure. And it continues to be, you know. I've been doing this for 30 years, and I still get really excited.
The runtime for the finale shows up as 49 minutes in parentheses on the Disney Plus show page. Now, what if you only want to see the action? What if you want to skip to the first part of the show and then turn off the show right before it cuts to the credits? Well, in that case, then you only need about 41 minutes and 20 seconds for the finale. That's from the low-angle shot of the Chimera to Anakin's Force Ghost. Here are episode times rounded to the nearest minute for all 8 episodes now. 50 minutes, 37, 29, 33, 44 for episode 5, 41, 37, and now 41 minutes for the finale. The description of the episode reads, "The heroes race to prevent Grand Admiral Thrawn's escape." It's not a spoiler if you're listening to this podcast right now, but they fail. Director of photography for this one was Kuyen Tran. Editors were James D. Wilcox and Dana E. Glauberman. Costume designer Shauna Tripsik has done great work in Star Wars, but I'm sad to say she passed away 2 weeks shy of her 57th birthday and a day after the finale of Ahsoka streamed. Her work on The Mandalorian, The Book of Boba Fett, and Ahsoka was terrific, and she will be missed. It's time to talk about the cast.
What's your name, son?
Ahsoka Tano is played in live action by Rosario Dawson. Natasha Liu Bordizzo plays Sabine Wren. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is Hera Syndulla. Ray Stevenson is Baylan Skoll. Ivana Sakno is Shin Hati. Diana Lee Inosanto plays Morgan Elsbeth. David Tennant is the voice for Hu Yang. Lars Mikkelsen is the voice and the actor behind the blue makeup of Grand Admiral Thrawn. I've mentioned it a couple times, but I'm going to do it again. Lars is the brother of Mads Mikkelsen, who was Galen Erso in the movie Rogue One. Iman Esfandi is Ezra Bridger. And last listed among the featured cast is Hayden Christensen, reprising his role as Anakin Skywalker, albeit in Force Ghost form. Guest stars. Captain Enoch was Wes Chatham, who also played the Expanse's Amos Burton. Since he survives, I'm left to wonder, does this casting of an actor who's got a long job in a series before this one, like 67 episodes or something like that in The Expanse, why do you cast him if you never see his face and he has very little impact? I guess maybe he's going to either play a larger role in season 2 or the Mandoverse movie.
I want my next job.
The Great Mothers, the Night Sister Witches, each have a name. They don't speak in turns, but they also are survivors of season 1, which means Clothau, Actropaw, and Lachesis might have more to do in the Prime Galaxy. Maybe that comes on Dathomir. Maybe we never get to see them again, and they just make it out. But again, if you're gonna have them survive and make it to Dathomir, I gotta believe that there's a plan for them beyond season 1 of Ahsoka. Actropaw is played by Gerald Prescott Galleon. Lachesis was Jane Edwina Seymour. Clothau is played by Claudia Black. Yes, Aaron from Farscape, Vala in Stargate, and many other roles. I mean, she's a Comic-Con regular and a fan favorite. First Officer Vic Hawkins keeps getting listed, and Nakan Robinson must have a good agent because he has almost no role in the episode or in the series. Before we get to Obi-Wan's line, I noticed among the stunt performers that Latif Crowder showed up in those credits, but it's not listed on his IMDb page. I went and checked to see if he was there in the last episode credits as a stunt performer, and he was not. So, since he's been performing in the Mandalorian suit of Beskar doing stunt work since the beginning, maybe he was doing some zombie night trooper stunt work in part 8. All right, now here's Obi-Wan.
He can go about his business.
You can go about your business.
Move along.
Move along. Move along.
Yes, I am trying to get through this as quickly as possible. I mean, this probably gives you a hint as to how I feel about the episode, but let's just keep moving. When you press play on the episode, you start with a Disney snap. There's a previously on segment. Then you have the Lucasfilm Limited logo appear, and then the Star Wars helmet sequence, just like always. The episode starts with the Chimera, Thrawn's ship, hovering above Kujet's tower on Peridia. Cargo transfer is nearing completion, and just so we get this out of the way now, we never confirm what that cargo is. We can suspect, but we never get confirmation. The one and only hint is that on Peridia, the cargo was stored in catacombs, and being Night Sisters, seeing the Night Troopers, I think we're meant to infer they are dead bodies and could be reanimated by the Great Mothers at any time.
The cargo transfer is complete.
Did they say complete? We clearly see them still loading the cargo. Thrawn's right there. When she tells him they're complete, he's not in a hologram on the bridge. He is standing right there. I know his back is turned, but he's watching the troopers load cargo. This is in direct contradiction to the statement that the transfer is complete. And he says,
good. Very good indeed.
I'm not saying Thrawn is Drax and he has to be literal, but if you love the show, you might call what many reviewers, including myself, due to the Ahsoka show, as nitpicking. You might say it's not. It really isn't. I can't say no one is nitpicking, but I want Star Wars to be good television. Not just for Star Wars fans. I want to be able to tell people what I told them about Andor. I want to say this is smart television that happens to be about stories told in the Star Wars universe. The Ahsoka series might not be intended that way, but to say it's made for a certain audience would imply then that you can make it for an audience that doesn't care about details or for the story to make sense. When you put it that way, there are people that get upset and they say, it's not just key jangling. It's not just appealing to only the less intelligent people, but Filoni can't have it both ways. You want me to say the show is great? Make it make more sense. Make your dialogue match the action. Make the dialogue better. Don't tell me Thrawn's a huge threat and then show me that he isn't. Don't tell me there's a ticking clock and then show me all the ways there didn't have to be a ticking clock.
Bring the Eye of Sion out of high orbit so that we may begin the interlocking procedure.
Here's an example. I mean, if you're trying to save time, sure, bring the Sion down. But we're told how time is of the essence. The cargo wasn't loaded earlier in anticipation of the arrival of the Eye of Sion. But okay, if that's the case, then why wasn't the Sion brought down immediately? If safety's more of a concern, then why didn't the Chimera just take off for the Sion in orbit immediately after loading the cargo? All of this only exposes Thrawn to criticism from us when we're told and we're supposed to believe that he is a mastermind, if of nothing else, of planning and tactics and expertise and logistics. I don't understand why we're being told one thing and shown another.
Comscan believes they have a fix on the Jedi shuttle's location.
Dispatch 2 TIE fighters if they find their mark. Tell them to engage.
2? If he sends all he has, maybe all of them come back. Maybe there's no more threat. Also, Comscan? Why didn't we just see the witches pinpoint them? Listen, I'm going to have to start moving through this episode quicker because if I pick apart every example of how poorly it's written or planned or executed, look, the script is just not good. I keep hoping we're shown this prowess of this military mind, but instead we're shown time and time again that he's no different than any other Imperial officer. And if that's the point, okay.
There is little the Jedi can do to stop us now.
I've watched many an Imperial officer make the same assumptions about the Rebellion.
Once again, we're supposed to believe he's different. But we're only given reasons to doubt that. He's been stranded in this other galaxy since before Rogue One. I think it's a stretch for him to say many. Filoni could have said one too many, and it would have worked better, but he only shows up in Season 3 of Rebels. Thrawn does. He's seeing the same couple of officers screw up around him, and I doubt he's considering NCO stormtroopers in his comment.
Great mothers, our alliance has proven to be quite beneficial.
We are grateful to you, Grand Admiral.
And to you, Morgan Elsbeth. She who heard our dreams across the stars.
Come forward. Do you pledge yourself to the Sisterhood, to the magics, to the old ways?
Thrawn, this warlord, addresses the witches and calls their relationship beneficial. I don't see how yet. We're told it is, but we're not given a reason to believe that that's true. This cargo transfer has to be the huge win for them. Now, we have to assume that, but we're not told why. Okay, But that doesn't mean it's great writing just because you don't tell us. He's planning on telling us elsewhere in another show, maybe? The Great Mother's offer to bestow Morgan Elsbeth with a gift of shadows. We've seen this in animation before, and I believe we've also heard the same recitation there. The words they're using. Now, normally, I would track down and play that similar audio and maybe play it back to back so that you could see. But listen, the season's over, and I just don't feel like it would add enough context. There's nothing there for you to gather from hearing that it's both the same. All I can tell you is if you went back and watched the Clone Wars, you would hear something similar, and you would see this sort of thing happen in a different way. It's animation, but nothing comes of this bestowal anyways. I mean, if you've seen the episode, you know why, but it ends up being nothing more than a callback to Filoni's work in animation. So it's like a pat on the back. Now, that may be canon Star Wars, but it comes off more as self-promotion than as something that you should know and, oh, that's right, that happened in Clone Wars. He's referencing his work, his created canon. Now, that might be nostalgia to someone younger, but it's not like it's even prequel old. And again, it doesn't come to anything. We don't learn anything because of this. I mean, I'll just say it. She dies. I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just trying to point out, like, if she was alive for a few episodes and you saw the result of that power. But remember, she fought Ahsoka very well without this bestowal in the Mandalorian episode that she appeared in. So there's really, except for this sword that she's going to get, there's nothing special about the bestowal.
The blade of Talsin. Take it, sister.
The sword, too, is a Clone Wars era nod, and that also doesn't really add up to much. Maybe if Ahsoka looks at it when she gets it and says something special, like, oh, this is special and this will turn the tide or something. It just is a nod. Mother Talzin, the Blade of Talzin, is Darth Maul's mother and a great mother of Dathomir. But I believe she's dead. I think from the series we're supposed to believe, like, she disapparates. You know, and I don't know how the sword got into their possession or was magically transported through space and time. I suppose, I mean, she did in fact wield this blade, and it looked just like it in the Prime Galaxy in animation. So, you know, how do they have it? Maybe Rise of Skywalker created the answer by passing the lightsabers back and forth. But, you know, the great mothers conjure it. You know, there's green magic when they make it appear. And a couple of things I noticed on repeated viewings are there is some real hesitance for Elsbeth before the ceremony begins. Like, she's not, I felt like she wasn't sure she wanted this bestowal. It's almost as she's, you know, maybe she's not ready for this commitment. Maybe she knows it precedes her later hesitance at agreeing to stay behind. Maybe she kind of knew, like, if I do this, I'm getting this power, but it's going to be short-lived because I'm going to be expected to use it and die here. If the Great Mothers weren't so insistent on getting to this other galaxy, maybe Elsbeth doesn't have so much pause. But this commitment she's making includes the words, your life. So I think she gets that that by committing to this and receiving this power, it's almost like she's dooming herself. Also, there appeared to be something that Clothau wanted to say between Morgan taking hold of the sword and bowing, but she holds her tongue. I don't know if that's she was going to say something and they cut it, or she was about to say something and whisper it, or they were going to have some imagined or mental telepathy going on. It could have just been padding by Rick Famuyiwa, but, you know, I don't know if staring silently at the screen and then almost uttering a word is a Rick Famuyiwa hallmark.
Ah!
Okay, for some reason, the T-6 is flying low and slow when we cut to that scene. Now, talk about attachments. Ezra should have wished the Noti well, and they could all have done what they end up doing later anyway. But what possible help can he provide them now, or they provide him? And yes, I know one of the Noti is seen with Huyang, but you can't tell me that's why they're here. And it just doesn't make sense script-wise. What possible reason does this team of Ezra, Sabine, Huyang, and Ahsoka, why would they possibly want to be taking it slow and bring these innocents with them that can only be a liability to strategy? This is just not something good writers do. We're told they got to get there. And then we see them going real slow. We can gloss over these things if you want. I mean, if you want to, you can choose to overlook these obvious things. And on first watch, maybe you don't notice these things. Maybe they're not very apparent. But the issue for me is Disney's not making these shows to be watched just once and then never again. It's not of such great cinematic value or story value that you can just overlook these contradictions. Ezra is leading them into danger, and he shouldn't if he cares about them. And we're told or shown that he cares about them, and we're supposed to believe that. But he's supposed to be leaving soon. We've also been shown and heard that from his lips. Was he hoping he would find a way to bring them away from their home into a new galaxy? We're not told or shown that that's a dream or a wish of the Noti or Noti. We haven't even gotten to the scene of him rushing to build a lightsaber yet.
The blade emitter's too narrow.
Now look here, I've been teaching younglings how to construct lightsabers longer than you've been alive.
That's great, but I don't have time for lessons right now.
Okay, now that scene appears, and I can appreciate the callback here. One of the issues people had with the Rebels animation early on was how thin the lightsaber blades were drawn in animation. So the blade emitter is too narrow. You know, that's a good callback. It's not too heavy. It's not too important. It's just a little nod. Those are the ones that are okay. Everyone should be okay with those kind. Huyang is supervising here, but clearly he is showing more respect for even this Boken Jedi, as Baylan Skoll would have said, than he is to Sabine. Sabine is a pouter, and I think this is really the point that I made my decision. I just hate what Filoni has turned her character into. I liked Sabine in Rebels. I mean, it is his right. It is Filoni's right to do whatever he wants. Not because he's the creator, but he's a creative director at Lucasfilm now. This is what he wants to do. I just don't think anyone could honestly respect her journey. If you do, you must just love the character so much that you're willing to accept anything. He made it this way. He wrote the journey this way. He wrote it so she was a complete failure for 10 years and then suddenly at one point ends up unlocking the mysteries of the Force and becomes too powerful in such a short amount of time. I just don't know what Filoni was thinking, what he was doing, and if it was an intentional decision on his part.
Who told you how to build a lightsaber anyway?
Kanan Jarrus.
Is that so?
Yeah. He was my master. Taught me everything I know.
And I taught him how to build a lightsaber.
What?
Of course. Now it all makes sense.
How could you know him? Sabine?
I told you, I taught almost every youngling at the Jedi Temple, including your master. Clever boy Caleb was, very curious.
Another odd choice by the scriptwriter, who could have easily had Huyang speak a line about the difference between Kanan Jarrus and the name Caleb, but it's just tossed in there. I know the significance of Kanan Jarrus and Caleb. There may be some that watched The Bad Batch, all of Rebels, and still don't know what I'm talking about right now. These are those self-inflicted problems, those unforgivable ones to me. You can't just expect people to understand when Huyang is 1 minute talking about Kanan, and then the next minute calls him Caleb. There is nothing in the world of Star Wars where we have seen at any other point in time, in any of the movies, where someone takes a different name. Like, Anakin Skywalker becomes Darth Vader because he switches to Sith. So, are people to assume that Caleb was his Jedi name and then Kanan Jarrus is his Sith name? That's the only other way that you could talk about someone having a different name. Darth Sidious, Darth Tyrannus, you know, Darth Plagueis, these are names that the Sith take, but that's the only reference to taking another name. And you could have just put a one-liner in there about, ah, yes, he used to be Caleb when he was a Jedi Padawan, but yes, now I know the name Kanan Jarrus from Ahsoka. You kind of have to explain that, or just don't use Caleb and everything's fine. Maybe. And I only mean it's possible. It's possible some of these problems were due to editing. But then you're blaming the showrunner in that case, who is the writer, and Filoni. So you're either blaming Filoni for the bad editing or blaming him for the writing. And since we know he's the showrunner, it can't be either. It's just bad. Famuyiwa repeatedly shows reaction shots of Sabine, and we are meant to gather she's listening to how Huyang is heaping praise on Kanan and Ezra. And for what, 10 years or so, she's been hearing how awful she is from this droid? Here's the thing. That is what we're being shown time and time again. I'm not making this up. I'm not supposing that maybe Huyang is being harsh. We've seen it in this show, only in the 7 episodes previous, and now here in 8. She never had aptitude for the Force. Filoni wrote it that way.
Well, I discovered that according to Huyang, I'm the worst candidate to be a Jedi out of every Jedi he's ever known.
You told her that?
It's true.
And now in this show we've been told that years and years of training haven't even made a difference. Filoni wrote it that way. I'm not inferring it. We have seen Sabine make selfish choices in this show. She embraced the darkness for her own feelings. It was echoed by the writing, and it was shown to us what can happen when someone does it. And I'm talking about Anakin. I mean, it couldn't have been clearer. It was so clear that we're supposed to draw this comparison between Master and Padawan and Master and Padawan. Master and Padawan, Anakin and Ahsoka. Master and Padawan, Ahsoka and Sabine. Huyang tells Ezra how well he has done in front of Sabine, and then seconds later, she vanishes from the work area to head outside and pout.
Well done. Looks like you were a good student.
Hey, Sabine, Ahsoka ever teach you how to...
Ezra asks what happened, and we hear that according to Huyang, Sabine's family was all killed in the Purge. Okay, there's a reason for it, but that doesn't mean that just because she has a reason that it's okay. It was fear of Sabine embracing the darkness that ended the training between Ahsoka and Sabine. If you dispute my take on this, where is your evidence from this show which proves otherwise? How about in Star Wars when a master senses darkness in a pupil? I'm starting to get angry at the show.
You're not mad?
Over the years, I've made my share of difficult choices. Often no one understood my reasons. Except my master. Anakin.
Can you honestly say that this method of mentorship works? I'll say this much. Anakin taught Ahsoka much differently than other Jedi taught their Padawans. But even knowing how he turned out, I can't say that she would only have learned a lesson that brought her to the dark side. Maybe she endured, but she didn't stay. Maybe if she had stayed, she would have had more balance. So perhaps the leniency to Sabine is something out of self-preservation, except we know Ahsoka would not fall. And this is probably the heart of my issue with how Sabine and Ahsoka are portrayed in this Padawan-master relationship. Sabine didn't just fail once. She doesn't just fail once. She's failed over 10 years. She's been failing. This isn't Grogu being powerful in the Force and then, hey, we need to train this because he's going to use it regardless. And if we just leave him to his devices, he might go evil. And this isn't her deciding it's too dangerous to train him because maybe he never develops the Force. This is a Force inept Sabine. She has no power. And she ends up teaching her despite warning signs. Filoni intends us all to see this master is never giving up on the pupil, but he doesn't set it up right. He doesn't write it in a way that makes it believable to the universe that we already know. A universe that he's already had a hand in creating. He wrote and directed The Jedi, the episode with where she refuses to teach Grogu.
Anakin.
He always stood by me. Even when no one else did. That's why, no matter what happens next, I'm going to be there for you.
No, Anakin did not. Ahsoka left the Order. Anakin stayed. And then he left. Also, was that really the message that you were trying to make us understand? Is that a master should never disapprove of what the Padawan does? Even when someone shows their true colors to be dangerous ones, we're supposed to, oh, just keep down that path. Once we've started it, everything will turn out. It's more dangerous for us to walk away or for us to end the relationship than it is for them to just continue down the wrong path. Is that what learning is supposed to be like? Hey, man, I cut off my arm with these power tools. I'm just going to keep using them the same way and not even consider that I'm using them wrong, because that would be wrong for me to say, you're using them the wrong way and maybe you shouldn't do that. It's just ludicrous.
Now, have you kept up with your training?
I try. I do.
This line here, it's just there for a reference to do or do not. This is bad writing. And I think this is Filoni signaling again to everyone, hey guys, this planet is Sabine's Dagobah. Except, by Dagobah, Luke had summoned the lightsaber to him and already destroyed the first Death Star, among other feats that he must have performed in between the end of A New Hope and the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back. No. Training would be working on a skill, but she has zero Force skill. She's not training. She was continuously trying to learn just an iota of connection to the Force.
I have gained better control over my lightsaber.
At this point, we've seen plenty of other people wield a lightsaber who we also don't see using the Force. I mean, Han among them. But then again, the dark side is the quick path. So, if you're faced with fight or flight in this universe, maybe, since we're constantly being told by Disney in their version of Star Wars that everyone has access to the Force, maybe everyone gets closer to mastery in those moments. Wielding a lightsaber when I was growing up meant you were strong enough with the Force to not cut your own limbs off. Now, it doesn't mean... And yes, I'm aware of Han and the Tauntaun scene. Han used it as a knife on Hoth, not as a sword in battle. Heck, even Finn... Now, he may have been retconned into Force sensitivity, which would explain him using it on Takanana and Ilum / Starkiller base, but at least they did show that he had some Force sensitivity to use the lightsaber with any, and I mean any, sense of connection to the Force. Because Ahsoka was just shown in Rebels being taught how to wield a lightsaber, not being shown how to wield the Force. There was never, ever an implication in Rebels or the Clone Wars or any other show that Sabine Wren had any Force sensitivity.
I'll tell you a secret. Being a Jedi isn't about wielding a lightsaber.
It helps, especially in our situation.
Train your mind. Train your body. Trust in the Force.
I mean, again, this is telling a person that grew up in the middle of a jungle, imagine the sea. Sea? Sea of what? Wait, you're talking about water? So, the big river that cuts through the jungle? No, even bigger than that river? Sabine has no concept of the Force. She has seen it work through Kanan and Ezra and Ahsoka. She's been training for 10 years, but she couldn't rattle a cup on a desk. And that happened in this show. We do get an explanation for why they are taking so long. Ezra, it seems, was building that lightsaber from scratch. But again, Filoni seems to have forgotten the training sabers on the wall that could have been repurposed, or maybe in this universe they can't, or maybe Ezra did take one of those and made the case like, hey, I want to, you know, make this my own. It's just a weak explanation. The two TIE fighters come screaming in. They start blasting. And in space, Ahsoka did all those moves on the wing, remember? With her lightsabers? Here, her sabers stay in her pockets, basically. I mean, seems like a weird time to forget how to do that. And she only did it a couple episodes ago, but sure, okay. Then Ezra and Ahsoka have to jump under the T-6 to keep it from hitting the ground. And I'll just give Filoni some narrative leeway here. Because it seems like either it's going to hit the ground or it doesn't. But okay, maybe they keep it up. And then, well, you know, I just can't. He gives them this over-the-top physical strain. Somebody told them to do that, to look like it was. It took a lot of energy to two people to keep this thing up. I know Master Yoda is extremely powerful. Maybe the Force is not physical, but it's a mental strain on Ahsoka and Ezra while they're holding it up. Whatever. The point is, Sabine and Hu Yang are in the cockpit, and then look, this is just dumb. Now! Ezra and Ahsoka basically help force push the T-6, and Sabine then gives it a last blast of the engines, and she runs into both of the TIE fighters, and the T-6 ends up crashing. What possible reason do the TIE fighters have to not avoid the ship and not even try? This isn't even a Holdo maneuver.
Got him.
Gotham just makes me hate Sabine even more. It doesn't land with me after everything I've seen. I'm not even through 12 minutes of this show, and it's getting really hard to stay positive. I haven't been positive, but I'm trying to, and I think maybe I should just let it go, because trying to hold back is just making it worse. So after Sabine's snark, Ezra makes sure that we're all still with it in this story here. You guys realize what's going on, right?
Sorry to state the obvious. This is going to slow us down a bit.
Only if we let it.
I just want to skip through the rest of the episode here. I mean, sorry to state the obvious? You know, we're in a hurry? When have you shown us that you guys are in a hurry? Ahsoka's not going to let this break her stride or slow her down. The next scene in the Tower of Kujet is back to showing us Thrawn is a screw-up. Enoch updates Thrawn on the TIE engagement, but says, a successful strike was reported on the T6 before they lost contact. Thrawn immediately assumes, oh, the tire lost. But also assumes that the shuttle is downed. There was a successful strike, but then our TIE fighters were lost. So then what does he do? He just offers to honor the captain of the group. We're supposed to see this is inspiration to his troops. I mean, he is honoring their sacrifice here with this citation, but I don't see this. I'm not suggesting the troops would mutiny, but all they've seen under him is we're expendable. We got trapped out here in another galaxy. You've done nothing to try to get us home except wait for someone else to come rescue us. And then your planning since then has been terrible. But we, the audience, are being told, man, this guy is a genius. They all know it. But where are the winds coming from that are supposed to galvanize his troops under his command? Where are his victories? Then he assumes ground assault as if that was some genius level leap of logic. What are they going to do if you already assume they don't have a ship? How are they going to get to you? Are they going to fly? Are they going to float? With their own... We cut back to the downed T-6 being worked on by a Nati or Noti. I don't know how to say their name. Whatever it is. Not I. Under the supervision of Hu Yang. This just doesn't make sense. It's just something we end up going with. Because, whatever. All the technology must work the same in both galaxies. Or maybe Hu Yang is just the best teacher of all, or whatever. Oh, and that ground assault? Sabine, Ezra, and Ahsoka are riding howlers.
May the Force be with you.
Back at the tower, Elsbeth, with her newly painted face and dark eyes, courtesy of the magic of the Great Mothers, she's inspiring volunteers who are going to sacrifice themselves with honor for Thrawn. I mean, they too have waited for years to return home. And they could have, if their supposedly brilliant leader would just have planned a little bit better. But hey, now they're cool with being cannon fodder for three lightsaber-wielding Force users. Well, two good ones anyway. Thrawn must hold so much sway that he didn't even have to ask this of his troopers himself. He can have Elsbeth do it.
Go now. Let none pass.
Those are the volunteers.
Yes, Grand Admiral.
They were made aware.
They were. All were honored to make the sacrifice. For you.
It is for the Empire. The security of our galaxy.
Empire? Did Elsbeth or Skoll or Hati not tell you? There is no Empire. There hasn't been for a while. I don't care how connected Morgan Elsbeth is to that group that we saw at the end of The Mandalorian in hologram form. His return doesn't immediately restore order to anywhere. All it does is plunge the galaxy into civil war. Your side, by the way, lost a lopsided war when you guys had the numbers and it was in your favor. Oh, I realize we have the benefit of knowing where the story goes, and I know there are a lot of sympathizers, but if you want me to believe that Thrawn believes he can come back and then just immediately whip the galaxy into shape, you're going to have to write it better, and Filoni didn't. The ground assault team nears the tower. Ahsoka wants an update on the T-6. Hey, I mean, it's all right. Hu Yang's got help with these Notai people, right? Should be up in no time. Don't worry about it. Suddenly, old arm-crossing Ahsoka is this font of positivity. She asks Ezra, what are we up against? And we get a little hint at what happened after they arrived. The chimera with Ezra and Thrawn.
All right, Ezra. Any ideas of what we're up against?
Look, Thrawn found this place. He woke up the witches, rebuilt his starship. It wasn't safe to come here alone.
Well, you're not alone anymore. Let's try the front door.
So I think Ezra's comments mean he actually stuck around for a little bit to be able to share this information. Maybe there was a mutual survival keeping Ezra with the Chimera group at first. Maybe there was a fragile peace even until Thrawn found this tower and then woke up the witches. It leaves all sorts of questions, and these are ones that I'm okay being left unanswered at this point because they don't really tell us anything useful for the story. I don't need to know now how Thrawn awoke them or what that meant. It would have been nice to know, but I don't need to know because clearly we're going to be shown at some other point because we don't even know what the cargo is. I don't need to see a flashback to what happened to bring Ezra to this Noti caravan or any of that. It's still one of the most interesting things about the episode for me that, you know, this part of canon where the Night Sisters, we've seen them before, now only in video games and in animated form, but I'm not against new canon being introduced. I just want it done in a cool way that makes sense. And Ahsoka's tactic here to assault the tower, of all the things that I can nitpick, this actually does make sense to me. So if you're going to try to sneak in, you're going to go slower, and then you're going to be seen by scanners, and then it's going to be over before it begins. So sometimes, and maybe video game players understand, sometimes the best shot is just full send. Just full send. Because you don't give the other team a chance to prepare for your attack. Their best shot is go fast, hope we haven't been tracked. Yes, it's still a long shot, but how else are they going in at this point?
Rain hellfire upon them.
Hellfire? Not just a Dungeons and Dragons club in a Netflix series. It must also be a planet, because does hell exist in the Star Wars universe? I've looked at Reddit. I decided to mention this anachronism anyway because I noticed this on the first watch. I noticed him saying hellfire on the first watch. There's nothing more to it, but it was weird to hear hellfire. The ground assault serpentines through turbo laser fire and they open the doors to the Tower of the Force. But again, this seems to take a physical toll on the users. They even try to get Sabine in on the job. I get it, you're optimistic that she's going to unlock the Force suddenly, but I think I'm going to go with Ahsoka and Ezra just not being as well trained or as efficient with the Force to explain why they're having some physical or showing some physical strain here. You're not going to convince me that Sabine actually unlocked her Force powers here suddenly. It did not happen. It just doesn't jive with what we've been told. I'm including Luke at the end of episode 8 in that. I mean, physical strain or physical toll on your body from using the Force doesn't make sense to me. They make it inside the tower. Thrawn looks visibly perturbed.
Dispatch the Night Troopers. I shall inform the Great Mothers that it's time.
Wait, are you telling me things aren't going as planned for this master of tactics? The genius is troubled? Thrawn has to move up his plans? And go explain things to the Great Mothers who can see the future? I honestly, listen, I do not have an answer for how to fix this script. Because we're already too far down the wrong path. He wrote the whole series. We're 8 episodes in. You can't fix it by now. The damage, so to speak, has been done. At least 20 Night Troopers are advancing into this open area instead of just protecting the choke point at the Tower of the Stairs or the Tower Stairs so that they can't get up. I mean, you could have had groups standing in front of there with groups on the steps behind or just had periodic, some way to slow them down more instead of just everybody coming out and being, I mean, how many times do you have to juggle back blaster bolts before one of them hits them? And clearly they're not wearing Beskar armor, so there's very little protection for them. You can blame whoever's in charge of making this happen, but it's a really basic tactic. I did not have any military training, and I can see how bad this is. I mean, there's no reason even with those numbers, that 20 of them firing can't sneak a shot or two past the four lightsabers. I mean, we saw what happened with Order 66. I'd actually say Ezra would be the most susceptible to falling because of a blast, because he's had the least amount of practice with a lightsaber. He hasn't had a lightsaber to practice with. He's, you know, the Force is his ally, or whatever he says. Sabine would be an easier target, and she actually does get hit, but she's wearing Beskar armor. So the blaster bolts, they still might end up knocking her down or off her feet, but at least that's a little bit more believable that she got hit, because she's not Force adept. I'm still okay with it just being, hey, Imperials are dumb and they're bad shots, and that the Jedi are better. But maybe someone could have said, maybe we just don't have this many troopers here in the hallway. And then you could have dropped that number a little bit and just made it just a tad bit more believable. I mean, I do like the scene. I like that Ezra doesn't shy away from his using his saber offensively. It's not like he's a pacifist, right? I mean, he cuts some guys down, even slices somebody in the back or up the rear. He and Ahsoka also team up for that pull and slice maneuver, taking out the last two troopers, and that was awesome. Here's another sign that I've already checked out on the series, and I won't be bothered to look up the Clone Wars or Rebels clip again about the chanting. I didn't even remember which show it was, but the Night Sisters are making a similar chant to one that raises troopers from the dead here, as one that has raised, you know, dead Night Sisters and dead Night Brothers and stuff like that. Yes, they're zombie Night Troopers infused with Night Sister magic after this chanting. I don't mind this. But what, you know, what did Elsbeth mean by selling protection to those troopers in her speech? You know, she's saying that the Night Sister magic will protect you against the Jedi. Is this what she meant? Because, I mean, I guess they should have figured that there's going to be some fine print on that. And what happens to the ones that the trio trapped and didn't re-kill after the Night Sisters leave? I know the tower falls, but are they just trapped in a perpetual state of, like, if somebody takes a rock off, or are they, you know, the time erodes the mountain, are they gonna wake up? Are they just doomed to haunt the halls of the tower or the catacombs until the Great Mothers perish? Is that how it works? Or because we saw lightsaber blade slashes not kill them, blaster bolts didn't kill them, but I guess it's like Zombies of the Walking Dead, where you have to, you know, Sabine puts a lightsaber through her head. I guess, is that the only thing that will kill them dead for sure?
Nice moves.
She's been training.
What's your excuse?
I missed you.
At this point, I'm not even sure I want to comment on the dialogue anymore, because it's as bad as the plotting. Just now is when Thrawn decides, hey, let's dock with the Eye of Sion. They could have just taken off as soon as the cargo was loaded and then done this at a higher altitude, or, you know, take off, do it in orbit without the Sion descending at all. This is when Thrawn does Elsbeth dirty. She, who made it possible for his return, is less important than his right-hand golden-masked man. I mean, Enoch can't stay behind to make sure the ground assault gets delayed. For some reason, Thrawn is all about this guy, Enoch. All Thrawn's delaying is okay, because he's going to ask Elsbeth, you make the ultimate sacrifice. You stay behind.
We require a little more time.
I understand.
For the Empire.
I mean, to heck with you, Thrawn. You're screwing up constantly. She's the one asking all the right questions about your tactics. Even the Great Mothers don't put up a fight with Thrawn and stick up for her. Here you go, Morgan. Take your black eyes and dead witch's sword and go stand in that gap.
Down for me.
It's almost funny, then, that Sabine and Ezra are just permitted to move around Elsbeth and Ahsoka and keep going. It's probably not intentional, but it kind of does read to me as a middle finger from Elsbeth.
We stay together, remember?
You must stop Thrawn. Now go.
I suppose if Ahsoka thought there was literally nothing standing between them and Thrawn but Elsbeth, her instruction then makes sense. Ahsoka might suspect Elsbeth has more power now, but that only makes 3 against 1 make more sense to me. That would have been quicker. 3 of you go up against her, she's done, then we can all go together. What makes even more sense is Sabine taking out her blasters, just double barrel Elsbeth to the ground. Are you telling me that she's had any training to block blaster bolts? It makes zero sense to me. But it's there to create the combat that we will see that people lose their minds about. I'm sorry if you're of the opinion that this is one of the greatest battles in Star Wars. It most definitely is not. Flashy and fast? Maybe. I mean, it's entertaining. I also don't know why the zombie death troopers weren't employed earlier. These are not freshly animated. These are supposedly elite troopers. They must have been dead for years. Maybe the Night Sisters even killed them with magic and then later reanimated them for Thrawn's protection once they struck a deal with him. Ezra puts a lightsaber right into one's midsection and it doesn't kill it. Meanwhile, Thrawn and the Night Sisters are on board and coordinates are set, and he finally orders them to take off. There is no urgency in this move.
Take us out.
I think I'm more safe now, a month removed from the episode, to say this is poor script writing. I think it's more accepted now that people have come around and said, yes, Filoni was a terrible scriptwriter. The words just are not matching up with the actions, and I have to believe that that is scripted. What might be the absolute worst thing that Filoni does happens in this group of scenes. The zombie death trooper is choking out Sabine. She's lost her lightsaber, and now's the time. Finally, she connects with the Force. So let's review. She's near death. She's desperate. Must be some fear in there. But she's been training for 10 years. But she can't move a cup on a desk. Calm, collected. So she's reaching out in fear and in desperation for something quick. Oh, what about Luke in the cave, you might say? He was in trouble. That was the first time we saw him use the Force. Well, no. He used the Force to destroy the Death Star. And time passed between the medal ceremony on Yavin and Hoth. He certainly used the Force in between there. He may not have been adept at it, but this wasn't like an idea that he suddenly came up with in the heat of the moment. Also, go back and watch that scene on Hoth. Luke centers himself and calms himself before reaching out for the lightsaber. Even in the midst of the creature coming down the hall to him, he calms himself and then reaches out. All series long, we're not just told Sabine is the worst, and we are told it. We have been shown that she's the worst. So her unlocking this part now to pull the saber to her, it's cheap and it's awful. Remember, Filoni wrote the whole series. He wrote every episode. He could have had her be bad at it, but still connected. Maybe the cup rattles, doesn't, or just moves just a a tiny bit or something, and we get the impression that she's been working for 10 years and is finally starting to make some connection, or you know, or maybe something startled her and it moved, because none of that. It still could have been a great moment, but it isn't just this moment of her reaching and force pulling the saber to her. Ezra, moments later, does basically the same thing. Force grabs the lightsaber to him. This is Filoni saying, see, they're equals now. The way he wrote this and developed this does not feel genuine. It's the worst. It's terrible.
You can't make that jump.
Yes, you can.
I appreciate the confidence.
No, I push you first and you pull me across.
Spin.
Ezra. I can do this. Ezra! The longer you hesitate, the harder this gets. Come on! Ready?
Go!
And then he follows through and has Ezra do a force jump off of a tower, followed by a force push by Sabine. And honestly, this back-to-back sudden adept force usage is so bad. This makes the show unwatchable in the future for me. I loved Baylan. I loved Shin. I thought that was a great... I thought a lot could have been done there. I was excited for Ahsoka. This ruins it. Ezra is suddenly going to trust Sabine, based on nothing more than words, and then suddenly she has this ability. Surely they've been talking. Surely he's asked her overnight at the camp. They've had to have talked. He has to know that she's been having trouble, because she wouldn't have... I mean, if she lied to him and said, oh yeah, it's going great, then shame on her. But shame on him for being willing to trust his life in this moment like this, when staying behind keeps them together, and they can find another way. They can find another way. I mean, I know he wants... But this is how badly he wants to go home, huh? He wants to go home so badly that he's willing to force jump and then just hope that Sabine can get it together and suddenly develop the knowledge to force push him the rest of the way up onto the ship. We only saw this one other time in Rebels that I can remember. Remember when Ezra and Maul did it? Now, maybe you don't, because you didn't see the Rebels, but a dark side user did this with Ezra on Malachor. And they did it for a Sith holocron. Maul was trying to make Ezra his apprentice. Now, I know Ezra said, oh, me and my master used to do this all the time, but I'm not even sure that's the only time it's ever been done. I'm not saying that. But I think now there's enough evidence to show us Sabine is a dark side user. Sabine's giving of the map wasn't a smart move. That's the kind of reframing that people do, and Ahsoka does in this show when it suits your narrative. Honestly, to suggest Sabine is a Jedi is gaslighting. Filoni wrote this whole series. What he wrote, we saw play out already during the show. She reached out in desperation and unlocked the Force. Not in a moment of calm. She reached... the only time she ever got to reach out and use the Force, and what unlocked it for her, was the cheap and easy path. There's much fear and hate and attachment in Sabine. And just because she opts to stay behind after Ezra makes it onto the Chimera doesn't make her virtuous and retcon, or it doesn't suddenly make everything else before make sense.
Your friends are dead. And you will die here. Alone.
Not alone.
If this is the big moment, it's not for Ahsoka. This is not her success because she finally got through to Sabine. This is not Ahsoka's moment in Ahsoka's show. Sabine cannot redeem her wrongs by doing one nice thing. Her action shots are slow and not very exciting, and it's only made more noticeable by what's going on between Morgan Elsbeth and Ahsoka Tano. Look, Diana Lee Inosanto, Morgan Elsbeth, is terrific. The choreography is really good. It's very entertaining. But this is not the best lightsaber fight in Star Wars. I'm not going to pick apart the action in a podcast, in an audio-only podcast, but I don't have to. You can like it. It's fine. It's enjoyable. But you can't tell me that it's the best, and that if I don't like this as the best, that I'm somehow a bigot or I'm just prejudiced. Boy, let me tell you, the first few days after the episode streamed, hyperbole was just being poured out in buckets in the Star Wars online fan community. And I gotta tell you, that's my least favorite segment, and that is why this podcast suffers so much. There are some really great people out there in the Star Wars online community, but you say something negative, and it can be valid, and it can be, you know, reasonable. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. The trolls are just so strong. They're just so strong, and they're not. It is how our society is working right now. There's not a conspiracy where all of the media gets together and decides, hey, we're going to support Democrats. I worked in the news business. It's not that smart. It's just that it's populated by people who have the same ideals. So these people on Twitter, they're seeing the echo chamber and they're taking part in it. They're not getting together and planning this. It's just they can't help themselves. It makes Star Wars very much less enjoyable for me.
Morgan is dead.
She has done what was required.
Morgan is dead, huh? At least Clothau, the spinner and the youngest of the Great Mothers, and I'm basing that off her mythological Grecian counterpart, Clotho, C-L-O-T-H-O, who is the spinner in the three witches, the three Morai, M-O-I-R-A-I, the people who spin fate, measure fate, and cut fate. But Clothau seems upset at losing Elsbeth. I mean, she can sense it, right? So clearly, the Great Mothers have some attachment to the Force. It's different from Jedi, it's different from Sith, but they view it as magic, right? It's just from a certain point of view. Thrawn doesn't look pleased that Morgan's dead, but he's not this font of emotion, and we have seen him get upset in the show Rebels. So we know he's capable of it, but he's just calm and kind of moves on right away. We see Ezra looking out at his friends fighting on the tower as the ship docked with the hyperspace ring heads towards outer space. I mean, it's already docked. It's already on its way out. And then he hears comm chatter. He gives Rebels fans a little more of the Ezra that they know by assuming the identity of this stormtrooper 575, I think, or 757, something like that. I don't remember what the number was, but he's done this sort of thing before. And he, you know, sometimes he's, what's your name? My name is Jabba the Hutt, or my name's Lando Calrissian. He's even used Admiral Brom Tidus, I think, to Admiral Brom Tidus in the show Rebels before. Ahsoka then gets an update on the status of the T6 on her wrist guard. Good news. Beep boop, beep boop. It's ready. Our Uber's ready. She and Sabine head for the edge of the tower where they are going to Marty McFly and Back to the Future 2 off the edge of the tower. And I honestly, I didn't mind that reference. It's just a throw-in, of course, but it's not even done in a wink-wink sort of way. It's just they, I mean, it's reasonable for this to be like, it is to me. It really is reasonable. But back on the Bridge of the Scion, Thrawn orders the tower destroyed, and I was about to pick apart his timing, and I sort of still want to, but he only orders the destruction moments after hearing that Elsbeth was dead. So this does fit with what we've seen of him in this show. So tactically, maybe it makes more sense immediately destroy the tower after you take off, right? Then there's no chance, like, you know they're in the tower, destroy that tower, they're dead. But he shows a measure of compassion for the TIE pilots, and then even though they were willing to sacrifice, he showed them some honor, and maybe that honor that he has and that he has shown is the key to preventing him from ordering the tower blown to pieces while Elsbeth was still alive and doing what was asked of her. So I can understand that.
We're in.
Copy that.
Okay, but remember, so Ahsoka and Sabine, I was okay with them doing the Marty McFly, but they make it into the T6, and it seems like it's just in time, right? But I'm going to let it slide that a group of undead night troopers is going to shoot at these figures holding lightsabers on top of this ship instead of just concentrating fire on the engines. Maybe even with 20 troopers all aiming at the exhaust ports, it wouldn't be enough. Maybe blaster fire is just not strong enough. Because even though the TIEs clearly damaged the ship in a big way, somehow Hu Yang and the Nauti, or Noti, not I, whatever they're called, they got the deflector shields working. Because in a moment, the droid says, I'm diverting all power to the engines. So clearly, they must have had some deflector shields working on the rear of the ship. Anyway, them heading off towards the Eye of Scion and the Chimera, not enough power. Thrawn opens up a channel and gloats. And this isn't a time where it's used as a trope. You know, the good guys are going to use this time when the evil guy is monologuing, and then they're going to overcome and claim victory. Nope.
I regret we haven't met face to face, and perhaps now we never shall. Still, I know you, because I knew your master. I concluded your strategies would be similar. One wonders just how similar you might become. Perhaps this is where a Ronin such as you belongs. Today, victory is mine. Long live the Empire.
The Scion leaves the Peridia system for the galaxy far, far away, and we're all supposed to still believe Sabine somehow did the right thing. It's a failure by Filoni. It just is. Bad guys win. This whole show is a setup for another project of Filoni. Just as I feared, and just as I hoped would not happen. Not because bad guys win. I'm okay with that. It's how he chose to show us all the events leading to it. Terrible writing. Not as bad as Obi-Wan Kenobi. I will say that right now. Not as bad as Obi-Wan Kenobi, but really, really, really bad. Filoni shows Sabine going from zero to hero in a, I guess, in an 8-episode span. I was going to count one episode off where we don't really see her, but the zero part was right up to the last few minutes of the season. And he even undercuts it by having her choice in the middle of the show being one that contributes to what we see at the end. Her choice to give the map. Now, whether or not you think Baylan could have overtaken her and still gotten the map, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that was not her thinking. Her thinking was clearly, I will get to see Ezra again. It had nothing to do with, he's going to get it anyways. It didn't. That's not what we were told narratively. Sabine and Ahsoka, I mean, they've been defeated. They return to the Na'ti, who are repairing their caravans. Ezra remembers, not with them anymore, but if you're going to spend the rest of your life in isolation on a planet in another galaxy, I guess you might as well do it in community. And maybe they can offer some protection as well. But this is really... I just feel like this was just a scene to allow Ahsoka to notice the Convor, specifically Morai, which signals to her that she's in the right place. But unless you watched and remembered Rebels and the Clone Wars Mortis arc, you won't get the significance of her seeing that bird fly away, or bird creature. It wasn't referenced in the show at any time, not just throughout the show, not like just a repeated theme. It wasn't referenced at all. It is contrasted then with Shin Hati finding a group of bandits, and she goes and brandishes her lightsaber in order to rule over a group that might at just some point just gang up and kill her in her sleep, right? She would rather rule in hell, you know, than serve in heaven. Her master didn't abandon her, really. She could have still gone with him. He just told her she was on another path. And then she was offered a chance to seek out a much different path with Ahsoka. Just come with me. I can help you. Nope. She just goes off and sulks. She doesn't even try and return. She could have proved a very valuable defender in the tower rather than Elsbeth. She could have returned as one of the most powerful Force users left in the far, far away galaxy. Especially one that could prove useful to Thrawn. Nah. Let me just rule over these bandits. Then we see what happened to her master. He walks out onto a carved... It's a hand. The arm of the father of the Mortis gods. And we see... carved into the mountains behind the father, who has got his head is fully carved out of the mountain, but it looks like the sun is to the father's left as we're looking at it to the right, and then it looks like the daughter has a head missing or something on the left-hand side, which matches exactly what happened in the Mortis arc, where the daughter dies, imbues her spirit into Ahsoka, and associated with her is the Morai, the Convor bird that Ahsoka just saw. But you have to see the Clone Wars and Rebels to get what is going on. You have to understand, why is this so exciting? Oh, it's just cool. There's this carved mountain, and he's looking out at this other mountain, And there's like an emitter or a beacon. There's no references to this except to I'm seeking out a greater power. So all you are supposed to know, all you can know if you've not seen anything else, is he's on this quest to go. So the end of the show just sees him continuing his quest. Now, if there's no season two, we don't ever find out if he's not important in this show or in the Mandoverse movie. Then he's just off on a quest and we'll never see him again either. What are they setting up? A book? Are they setting up a comic? Are they setting up another show? You can't do it with Ray Stevenson because he's passed away. And I know you don't get to control that. But if you're Disney, why? I just don't understand this. I just don't understand. I watched those shows. I was a little shocked that the story was showing things like that in live action, but most people I know who say they're Star Wars fans, but are not at the level that I am because they don't obsess over it, or they don't have podcasts, they don't even listen to my podcast, and they're my friends. That's not their own fault because they haven't watched these other shows or don't want to watch animation. It's just bad storytelling. The show isn't done.
Approaching Dathomir, Grand Admiral.
We still have to see the Chimera making it to Dathomir, or in orbit around it. There's no fleet waiting, right? We get to see a shot of the cargo hold again. This is absolutely a reference to the top men scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's a trooper leading a container down the middle aisle. Why would they be rearranging cargo in transit like this if it wasn't just a callback to that other Lucasfilm property? It's because it is a direct reference to the guy walking the Ark down in the storage facility. Another scene shows the old Jedi shuttle that Shin and Baylan used at the start of the series, and I want to call back to that, because it's important. So instead of meeting that cranky old captain who's dead, Hera and a much larger group are there in the hangar awaiting whoever's going to step off the shuttle. And it was escorted in, I saw a couple of pilots, I don't know exactly, and I don't even care anymore what they were flying. They didn't just shoot it out of space. But it also just didn't. They also didn't fly in with it. They just kind of veered off when it was coming into dock. So clearly, I mean, we don't need to hear how Ezra convinced him that he means no harm. But this is the same ship that held two lightsaber wielding maniacs that ended up massacring a ship full of New Republic military just to liberate a highly prized prisoner in Morgan Elsbeth. And now they're going to approach Home One. And I just don't see how this makes sense to me unless he's revealed it to himself. If he's revealed it to them, what are they going to say? Oh, keep it a secret for Hera? Oh, and also, it's totally normal for someone to maintain that disguise just for fun, too. There's no other reason to wear that helmet off the ship except to have this setup scene of reactions from Chopper and Hera. Filoni or Famuyiwa is also responsible for having this wide shot where Ezra Bridger is walking toward his... After he takes off the helmet, he walks toward his friend Hera, who is the mother to a baby she had with this guy's Jedi Master, right? Kanan Jarrus was his Jedi Master. He might know that Hera has a baby, but he didn't get to see any of that happen. We don't get to see them embrace... or speak to each other. It's just that the whole show is a setup for something else. And the scene of the walk-up is also for only one reason. It's because Famuyiwa has this top-to-bottom Star Wars wipe that leads from Ezra walking towards Hera into Sabine walking toward a Nautai at their camp on Peridia. That's it. It's only so that they can do that little clever little wipe. Ahsoka is staring out from the surface at the Star Whale graveyard through the clouds. It's nighttime. And Sabine walks over to her.
You did well. Did I?
Respectfully? No. No, she didn't do well.
Thrawn got away. And thanks to you. Ezra got home. I hope. He did. Ezra is where he needs to be. And so are we. It's time to move on.
It might be time to move on. For me as a podcaster too, not just from Star Wars. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. All I could say is I was so ready to find something to hang my hat on. I was so ready for the series. I still, at the very end, I was ready to turn it all around. I remarked at Sabine's last line that at least Filoni had a killer line to end things. Sabine, suddenly she's almost powerful enough in the Force after a decade of failure that she can almost see a Forced ghost. She can almost see it. She instead says,
I felt like... nothing. Just shadows in the starlight.
And man, I thought, that's good. I thought, hey, that's a great line. Except... I don't think it was only Filoni's. Marketing for the publishing arm of Disney and Lucasfilm was way ahead of him. Shadows in the Starlight is an upcoming series of comics set in the High Republic era. At best, this was Filoni's line, but I think it's much more likely that it was a group conversation about a tie-in, and it's so out of place, as a matter of fact, in those final moments, that it, to me, becomes disingenuous. I suppose, you know, maybe I'd never make this connection if Disney Publishing could have just waited a few months before making an announcement. Maybe it makes it a little less obvious that it was in the works. But this isn't them working off a masterpiece anyways. I mean, this is Filoni's creation, and then they're tying into this. It's, if this was the only thing to pick on, maybe you say I'm nitpicking then. But you know, maybe I give the group the benefit of the doubt then. But I have a whole show I was hoping would be great, and even really enjoyed aspects of it. But ending with Anakin as a Force ghost, and I'm not even sure if either of them could see any part of it. We're only shown that he's there. It's really cheap. And I know he was with Ahsoka for years and she was like a daughter. But you have, you know, not everyone can see Force ghosts. She wasn't his daughter, though. And I'll say, unfortunately for these Star Wars creators that are coming after George Lucas, we have the original trilogy that shows us that Anakin embraced the light for his children, not Ahsoka. She abandoned him as much as the Jedi Order abandoned her. They admitted their mistake. Anakin still hasn't admitted he makes mistakes and he made mistakes with her. Not even when they were just together in the world between worlds. And I don't know what else to say about the show. I mean, we never discover what's in the crates in the cargo hold. We see two things from the Mortis storylines in the Clone Wars and a different imagining of the world between worlds from Rebels. Marrok is turned into green smoke. He's kind of pointless, but the zombified Night Troopers do not turn into green smoke. There's no explanation of that. We're just supposed to kind of understand that there's a difference. Star Whales apparently only go one way. But that's only so that we can be sure that Ahsoka and Sabine don't wait around and try to go back the way they came, or Ahsoka and Hu Yang came, right? There's no other reason that we're told, you know, they come here to die. Okay. But we saw a group jet off. And that ring wasn't made up of two or three Star Whales. I mean, Star Wars must be coming all the time, right? So it's possible that they could hitch a ride back. And I just don't understand what the Force Ghost thing is all about. And I know you say, well, that's what season two's for. But this show was never meant. It should not have been called Ahsoka. It should have been called Rebels Season 5 or something else. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. There's so many issues with the show. I'm not even going to waste my time trying to collect them all here. The writing is just terrible. I may still address some feedback that I've received. It's going to take me some time to decide if I have the desire to do that, though. And the feedback is amazing. It is fantastic. But my father just had open heart surgery in October. Ahsoka was not great. And the SAG-AFTRA and WGA strikes, despite them both being done now, I think, they have made it so that no new Star Wars content is going to be available for some time. This is probably a time for me to take a break from Disney+. As a matter of fact, I just canceled, as the recording of this podcast, I canceled our yearly subscription. It renews every year on the 12th, which is the day that it debuted years and years and years ago. I can still do Star Wars news updates. I can still keep a hold on this channel, but boy, the direction Disney and Lucasfilm are taking with Star Wars stinks. Maybe if my friends were more interested, I would think differently, but no one I know in real life is excited about Star Wars, and they haven't been for quite some time. It's honestly they're more disappointed than disinterested. It's not even like they're saying, I just can't be bothered. They don't like it. And woke isn't the right word for what's going on. It's not Disney going woke. I don't know what to tell you it is. It's just not good. I'll have to think more about it. But Disney needs to get somebody else in charge of Star Wars. People are not going to accept it if it doesn't fit more with the original trilogy than it does with the sequel trilogy. And I know they want to make the sequel trilogy stronger and they want it to make more sense, but that's not because it's a good story direction. It's because they're committed to that and that's their creation. They didn't have anything to do with the original trilogy or the prequels. They want everyone to think what they're doing is great. I have to think more about it, but look, I just don't want to do this anymore. I just don't.
This is the way.
This is the way.
That's it. Ahsoka's done. Next show is probably going to be Skeleton Crew? I don't know, maybe it's Acolyte. Delays have plagued both shows. So, it might... I think the High Republic set series, The Acolyte, is next. Not sure, but it's not coming out next week or next month. I mean, Acolyte is definitely a show. Listen, I am not covering that show weekly. I do not support their showrunner. That's all I'll say. I'll explain better in a preview of the series, and I'll cover the show somehow. But it's not going to be episode to episode, and I am not going to be quiet. There's no point in me being quiet or shy about my opinions anymore. I'm either going to cover that show in halves for one episode, or for first half, second half. I don't know how many episodes the show is going to be. I think 8, or I'm not sure. And there is an unless. Maybe I do cover every episode, but I don't even think that's worth imagining at this point because they still have the same showrunner. And I think I've heard enough about the direction of the show to tell me I'm not going to like it. But I'm still going to watch it.
This is the way.
This is the way.
What are your thoughts? Please let me know. You can send feedback or comments via email at thisisthewaypodcast@gmail.com. You can send it on Twitter, X, or Instagram, both at thisisthewaypod. And facebook.com is facebook.com/thisisthewaypod. If you don't want to bother with that, just go to our Linktree site, linktr.ee/thisisthewaypod. But if you want to be part of this discussion, you have to reach out. I know I've turned off a lot of people by my opinions, but they're my opinions. I'm not echoing something I've heard somewhere else. These are the things that I think about these shows when I talk to my friends, my family, people who love Star Wars, but just aren't happy with what we've been seeing. Thank you for joining me for the final episode of Ahsoka's first season. It was called The Jedi, The Witch, and The Warlord, Episode 8. I'm your host, Steve LaScalzo, and this is The Way. May the Force be with you, always.